There's an interesting Cambodian artist who was trained, and I use that term advisedly, in propaganda techniques by the Pol Pot regime in Cambodia 25 years ago, who now uses those same socialist realist techniques to document the atrocities committed by that regime back then. Reporter Daniel Lovering visited the artist, Peck Song, in his studio on a busy street in Phnom Penh.
When I arrived, Peck Song was working on a portrait of a young Cambodian woman. He explained quietly that it was for a French client and not the sort of painting he found meaningful, even if it paid the bills. But amid the canvases perched on easels and mounted on the tiled walls of his studio were paintings Song found profoundly meaningful, images from Cambodia's bloody past, as he remembers it. Song survived the killing fields of the radical communist Khmer Rouge by working as an official propaganda painter. He churned out thousands of slogans and banners promoting a regime that killed his parents, six of his nine siblings, and more than a million other Cambodians. When the Khmer Rouge took power in 1975, Song was working as an artist in Phnom Penh and teaching at the Royal University of Fine Arts. The Khmer Rouge expelled thousands from the city, and as Song fled the horrors of Pol Pot's army, he was captured, labeled a government soldier, beaten severely, and imprisoned. But one day, he succeeded in convincing his captors that he could put his talent to good use.
One day, I stole a piece of charcoal from the cooking place and drew on the wall of the prison. I drew a little sketch of the Khmer Rouge entering victoriously into Phnom Penh. I tried in every way to show them that I was a painter. So then they said I should draw a portrait of two members of the Khmer Rouge. They gave me a piece of paper and a pencil so that I could do it. And after I did the drawing, they started to realize that I was an artist. They stopped locking my feet. I took it that they were trusting me more. After about 3 months, they put me in a house made out of concrete. I became an official painter. I wore the black clothes of the Khmer Rouge.
To be an artist under the Khmer Rouge meant to be somewhat privileged, but only somewhat and only in some circumstances.
Dr. Tony Samantha Pim is an expert on Cambodian culture and teaches at the University of California at Berkeley.
Some people were supplied with food in addition to regular rations for offering their services, actually being forced to offer their services as painters, musicians. However, the artists serving the Khmer Rouge lived in constant fear of being deemed a traitor. One slip of the brush, one wrong move in a dance, and they could be labeled someone who wanted to sabotage the revolution.
I worked alone in a house with no one to talk to, no friends. I had to be careful about everything I said. For 4 years, I felt that way, every minute of the day and night. I could not use the color blue. Blue was the color of freedom. Only red and white, or red and yellow, for the banners. The calligraphy had to be strong and standing firmly. The characters had to be upright and square, or trang.
The Khmer Rouge regarded the color blue in certain politicized and culturally significant ways.
Ben Kiernan is a professor of history at Yale University and has written extensively about the Khmer Rouge.
It represented the anti-communist side of Cambodian politics. The Khmer Rouge was, of course, the Red Khmer. The person who coined that name for them, Prince Sihanouk, when he was in power in the 60s, also used the term Khmer Bleu, or Blue Cambodians, to describe the opposite political tendency.
From the meetings I attended, I had to produce mostly slogans and banners that said such things as victory of Cambodian communism. Others were about building courage, promoting health, agricultural slogans with unrealistic production aims. 1 hectare should make 5 tons of rice. Then they would put it along the road with a picture.
Some of the themes that recur in the songs and dances and in the banners are messages about the leadership, its power, its omniscience, its benevolence, and also messages about an idealized image of production, fields ripe with grain, factories running at full steam.
They would only say, add a factory behind this figure, add smoke or a field. They wouldn't show you a photo of Pol Pot. They'd only show you a film with him in it. Afterwards, you would have to paint his face without using a photograph. They kept giving me tests. Sat Bong, meaning try this, brother in Khmer. If you couldn't do something they'd ask you to do, it's over.
Every time people chose to, for example, show that they had a particular talent, like an artist letting the Khmer Rouge know that he could paint or could play music. Every time a person made that choice, he didn't know whether that would lead to his death or to some kind of salvation.
I always asked very, very clearly about what they wanted. This was crucial to staying alive, that you were extremely clear about what was expected.
Pek Song escaped the Khmer Rouge during the Vietnamese invasion of Cambodia in 1979. For years, he devoted his artistic energy to the few paintings that were commercially viable in Cambodia, portraits and dreamy impressions of Angkor Wat and classical Khmer dancers for wealthy foreign tourists. It wasn't until recently that he began confronting his country's past, and his own. Using the social realist style that dominated his early life, Song now documents the brutality of the Pol Pot regime. He also captures images of contemporary Phnom Penh. In one painting, Activities of Today, he shows landmine victims begging at the feet of flashy businessmen on a city street. Song hopes his future work will be of a different tenor. He told me, "Maybe if the people who lead the country start doing good things, there can be beautiful paintings of the next few decades." For Studio 360, I'm Daniel Lovering.